Blog Talk Radio.
Configured to Torah Chaim, instructions of life, Torah Chesed, instructions of kindness, Torah Rachim, instructions of mercy. You're now tuned into Blog Talk Radio, and we humbly assert we're the higher inner frequency of Blog Talk Radio. We post up Soul Talk. This is Soul Talk number 784, Proverbs, teachings to access wisdom and righteousness, presentation number 8. Blessed is our eternal Creator. Shalom, peace, and bracha, blessing upon the entire human family condition. With Creator's help, our next broadcast is starting right now on January 8th, 2023, now 10:31 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, live from Turtle Island, equals AKA, equals USA, equals Unified Soul Actualization. Central topic for discussion will be sharing the written and oral Torah traditions regarding King Solomon's Proverbs, one of the most powerful teachings from the Israelite Tanakh, Torah, Prophets, Holy Writings. If you want to join and make the program a little more organic, our call number is 563-999-3688. That's 563-999-3688. Meanwhile, the Eternal Creator bless and protect you and your loved ones peacefully and pleasantly. And the tags for today's program are Eternal Creator, Divine Image, Universal Redemption, Children of Israel collaborating with Children of Noah to remove hatred, jealousy, competition from this blessed world, oral and written Torah traditions of Israel, daily occurrences that can transform our lives, ascending and descending into this world in Torah traditions. You're listening from a website called Radio Ramon, highlighting some of the finest Sephardic music in contemporary society in the Middle East and spreading around the world. And let's just turn it down and get on the shoe. Yeah, okay. Now, I had invited two guests, co-hosts, Dennis Ryan, our Rambam teacher, student, activist with dissemination of the teachings of the Nesher Godel, the great eagle Rambam, but he's not in, and Robert Walter, a good dude from, more than just a good dude from Brooklyn, but neither has joined in. I'm assuming something came up, and hopefully they'll be able to join us, so I'm going to solo it, not hand solo it, but hopefully we'll be with the force of course, which is this source of all force, is the Almighty who spoke and the world came into being. So, blessed souls, recently I had gone to Chicago, and even before we get into that, let's just review some who's been listening to our program. We still have the United States, almost 53% of our listenership, followed by Canada, 12.40%, Russia, still 7.63%, and Jamaica, steady at 6.49%, and perhaps that is attributable to our good brother down there in St. Andrews province, Jerome Sage Butler, and a friend from Utica Avenue, taxi entrepreneur Rich, also the United Kingdom, and also we have now a following, which we, I believe we used to have, but it's been renewed, from the United Republic of Tanzania in Africa. We also have Kenya, and we also have Morocco. We have Russia, which is always nice to see, which I just mentioned. We have Canada, and we have Australia, we have Indonesia, we have South Korea, we have Japan, we have Vietnam, and we have the majority of the landmass of South America, Mexico, and maybe 50% of Europe. So the Europeans have fallen a little bit behind. They used to be more dominant in their listening to our humble efforts, but that's okay. So let me tell you what happened when I flew to visit family. I have family out in Chicago, the Windy City, not for the fact that there's a physical window that can be windy over there. It's right next to one of the five Great Lakes, Lake Michigan. But it's been, I was not unaware of this, and I'm not afraid to admit my ignorance in this matter, it was called the Windy City because of the storms of the political machinations that took place X amount of years ago. But anyway, one thing I noticed this time in my flying to Chicago is the intense anticipation when a person gets on the plane and he's been seated, or he or she has been seated, and then the steward or stewardesses brief the passengers about the protocol of a safe flying trip and what, heaven forbid, something can go wrong. And then there's the ascent. And most people are still looking at their contraptions. And there's a little bit of anticipation and maybe a little bit of anxiety, but there's an excitement, I'd say, that the umbrella, there's an air of excitement over the takeoff. And then the person journeys from, say, New York, LaGuardia Airport to O'Hara International Airport in Chicago. And there's the descent and the landing of the plane. So I was contemplating upon this upon returning home. And, you know, when the plane descends and hits the runway, many times the passengers clap their hands in congratulatory fashion to the crew members of the plane. And I would say that there was excellent customer service, by the way, for the American Airlines crew. To thank them for that after flying with them, going to Chicago and coming back from Chicago. And what I was thinking about this, you know, there are two experiences in our human lives for the 120 years that we dwell upon this planet, whether it be literally 120 years or a proverbial 120 years, when a person has lived out his or her lifespan. The anticipation of coming down into this world by the human soul, which was bathing in the light of the Creator's divine presence, along with the spiritual pool bank of other souls upstairs, and the excitement of going down, is there is a hesitation, because if one is bathing in the godly light of the Almighty, why would one want to come down to this world, which seems so indifferent to many, many different scenarios, and I think all of us know what I'm talking about, that there seems to be the opposite of the presentation of godliness here on this planet Earth, which is supposed to be an abode, the indwelling of the divine presence of the Creator. From the prophet Isaiah, the world is filled with his glory, yet it seems that many times that the world is lacking in the recognition of the glory of the Almighty. Okay, so in between going up into the air and landing, there's kind of like a lessening of the excitement, unless a person is nervous about flying in the air. Then a person again turns to their cell phone, or they watch a movie, they're being served snacks, or they make purchases, which most airlines offer, aside from the complimentary snacks. And it's ho-hum. Some people fall asleep, some people chitter-chatter. And I was thinking about how this was an allegory for life. We come into this world, there's great excitement by the majority of cases, and I hope it should be in all the cases of humans being born into this world, where the mother and father are excited, and if they're grandparents, they're excited, and if they're siblings of the mother and father around to celebrate, they all celebrate, and the child is cute the first year, and then, you know, then they get to the age of going to school, and it's kind of like the humdrum thing. You know, it's just what happens in human society for a good portion of the planet. Of course, there are certain areas where they're more agricultural and more forest-like environments, where the children are raised to be hunters and gatherers and farmhands to the exclusion of book wisdom and classroom wisdom, and they get living wisdom. But that just, you know, just to present that as scenarios of how people can be raised in this world. And unfortunately, in human society, aside from, you know, theological realms, theological environments in one's faith-based communities, whether it be inside a structure or outside of a structure, there is a teaching that there is where we came from. I think most philosophical or theological forms of faith have this type of presentation of where we came from, and also where we're going. But in between, sometimes there's not an emphasis in the in-between, meaning the living out of our 120 years. And I'm hoping just from this little allegory, this will help us to think more of the transcendent in our very mundane day-to-day lives that we carry out. And we can do that. It uplifts the mundane, you know, the getting up in the morning, putting on the pants, taking a shower, hustling and bustling to work or hustling and bustling to school, or whatever one's endeavors are, hustling and bustling to the gym to work out. It all seems kind of like rote. It's just like we become programmed to do it, and we miss the subtleties of profundities in any little experience. And part of that is planned out by divine intent that we should arise above our own human instincts, from our animalistic tendencies just to want to survive. And the process of wanting to survive, it can be sometimes the exclusion of the dulling of one's senses and lack of sensitivity to the revelations of godliness that can transpire in the smallest moments. Saying hello to a neighbor, helping someone across, the proverbial helping the older person, the elderly person across the street, to listen to a person when he or she are going through a rough time and not lecture them that it's their fault, but rather have maybe some ideas to explore them based on their value system and their sensitivities, how to get out of that system. Those can be very godly, profound experiences. But the question is, do we just want to go through life cruising on the plane of life and just getting excited when we ascend to this, when we descend to this world and ascend? Of course, there's a lot of excitement, unfortunately. When I say excitement, not getting nervous, it's just the heart beats a little bit differently when the loss of one's loved one, and we shouldn't experience this, but it is a fact of life in this exile of the human condition, that human souls have to go back to where they came from, back to that spiritual pool bank. So the question becomes, how do we react? Do we learn from the goodness that he or she exemplified in their lifestyles? In fact, there's a verse, "V'chayit nalibo," and the living shall take to heart those who have passed on. And this was also embellished in the book of Genesis, when after there was the formal passing on one dimension of Jacob, the patriarch, Jacob Israel, Yaakov Yisrael, in the oral Torah tradition, we say Yaakov Lomes, Yaakov did not pass on, because if his children carried on the righteous traditions that he inherited from his father, Isaac or Yitzhak, and Yitzhak inherited from his righteous father, Abraham or Avraham, Avraham on Goyim, father of all nations, and Avraham received traditions from Shem ve'Ever, Ever being the great-great-great-grandson of Shem, and Shem or Shem, the son of Noah, and Noah received traditions from Methuselah, his grandfather, and Methuselah received traditions from Chanoch, who is known in various circles even outside the 12 tribes of Israel as a righteous soul, who was king for 265 years back in Ancient of Days. And Chanoch got a tradition from either Shes or Seth, the son of Adam, who replaced Abel or Hevel. And of course, and Adam, original man, transmitted these traditions to his son Seth or Shes to transmit again to Chanoch, and Chanoch into Methuselah to Noach, and Noach to, in fact, Abraham learned for 30 years by the lap, spiritually speaking, of Noach. And he continued to learn with his son Shem, who was the high priest, also known as Malki Tzedek, as mentioned in the book of Genesis. So there's always been a tradition of righteous people spreading the word. And now that we're in the age of information, this information is much more accessible to all human beings via the internet. We're trying to share some of it, you know, little tips of the iceberg, because we can't do this 24/7. And we, and myself, I'm a student of these teachings for now 36 plus years, and may I continue to be a student of these teachings. And when we become students of these teachings, we have to decision if we want to exemplify these teachings. Because when we exemplify the teachings that inspire us about where we came from and where we're going and what's in between, then it permeates our human intellect, and the human intellect is the seat of our divine image, which helps us get off in scrimmage into the higher realms of consciousness beyond, again, the mundanities of life, making the right choices. It also means even with our human intellect, even though it's embedded within it is the divine image, we can make mistakes because from our mistakes, when we learn from them, we sometimes can accomplish even more. The example is that a person standing right in front of a desk is being asked to jump over the desk or jump onto the desk. He or she is not able to do that, to jump up, you know, straight up, unless a person is some sort of, you know, ninja warrior, it's very hard to do, or a gymnast, or a wrestler, or a football player, basketball player, maybe even a baseball player. But if a person takes two or three or four or five steps back and gains the momentum, then they can get on top of the table. Again, this is only allegorically being presented to you, blessed souls. That's about that. Now, I had hoped, Rob Walker would come on today. Unfortunately, he's not able to come on. But he grew up actually in the area where I live. I live in an area which is called Utica Avenue, off of Utica Avenue. I'm not going to say the exact street, but Robert lived within the block from where I live now for, I think he said, 20-plus years. And unfortunately, over the last week plus, there were two individuals, a 67-year-old woman and a 10-year-old boy who were killed by cars walking on Utica Avenue, I guess on the cross streets. I think the young boy, 10 years old, that's not a man, that's a boy. He was hit and killed, I think, on St. John's Street or Avenue. And the woman, I think, was, for those of you who know the Brooklyn, Crown Heights area, she was killed, I think, on Utica Avenue, crossing closer to Eastern Parkway, which is one of the main arteries in this part of Brooklyn, in the King County section of Brooklyn. So I openly lament I was not there when it happened. When I came back from Chicago, I just learned about this. And there were prayer vigils over there and lighting 50 or 60 candles for, I think, the young boy by St. John's Place. St. John's Place, I think it's called, actually. And a friend of mine was asking, thought they would lit the candles for the 67-year-old woman. And when we heard that it was for a 10-year-old boy, obviously he shuddered because no one wants to hear about such things. So those of you who are driving, please, be sober. You know, there are two families now in great distress, and it's a lifetime of potential trauma that they are experiencing now because of these horrible accidents. And the flow of cortisol is probably flowing, unfortunately, abundantly in their brains, which shuts down the frontal cortex of reasoning of why should such a horrible thing happen to their family. And we can't explain that. I'm not a prophet. Anyone to prophet, go prophet out your idea. But it's something to cause us to rethink and reevaluate what is our purpose in life, why did we descend down here, and why do we have to reascend. That's what I have to say about that. Prayers for healings for those families. I didn't see the names of either person, so I'm not. Maybe if I walk on, I hope to walk up Utica Avenue today. You have to make a visit to a family member, and if I see it, I'll try to remember it. So the next presentation, we can mention the names in prayer, that their soul should find respite in the upper chambers of heaven, that they should be, and their family should be comforted by the brother and sister love afforded them by their friends and family members of the greater community. Okay, the next thing I want to talk about is I was walking to the train. I usually take the 4 train or 3 train in Brooklyn, and again, off of Utica Avenue. And I saw a man, around my age, walking with a T-shirt that's on the back of it, very interesting enough, Man Up, and then there was a red line written on over man, and above the man it said God Up. So I was trying to think about what this shirt was trying to present. From man up to God up. Was he trying to say things are not up to man but up to God? Or we should become godly? Or some people unfortunately have this mistaken notion, should we become gods? I am one of the congregation of Israel that God is not a man or a woman for that matter. God is the Almighty is way above the form of a human being. And there are two prophetic teachings in the Tanakh, one in the book of Numbers, otherwise known as Bamidbar, where it's that Bilam was the prophet for the nations who tried to cast down the nation of Israel as they were passing through the area of Midian, an ancient culture, an ancient people who are no longer existing. And he said, the Almighty is not a man. And then in the book of Shmuel, book of Samuel, Sefer Shmuel, it's also mentioned that the Almighty is not a man. So anyone who would interpret it as man up, cross out the man with a red line, write God up, meaning we have to go up as a God, meaning become a God, you know, we of Israel reject that. To become godly, that's something which is relevant to all of us. The question is, what is the implications of becoming godly? To learn about the attributes which are available in the Torah or whatever faith-based teachings you have access to. Some of them have been distilled directly from the Torah, some indistinctly. But if you take away the word Torah, meaning divine laws, divine teachings have dispersed all over the four corners of the earth, and it's a matter of each person, according to his or her perception of those divine eternal truths, to see what they can do to learn from them and, again, hopefully integrate them into the soul garments of his or her thought, speech, and action. That's on that. Now, another thing I want to mention before I get to start to read from the book of Proverbs is I was reading yesterday from the book of Chronicles, which in the Hebrew is known as Divrei HaYamim. And in the book of Chronicles, it mentions Oz V'Chedva Bimkomo. And that was penned by King David of prophetic spirit, or Ruach HaKodesh, divine spirit, divine inspiration. And what it means is, in the place where you'll find the Almighty, you'll find strength and an inner internalized type of joy. So there's something which we can learn from, blessed souls, in our daily lives, that if we're lacking strength, we should attempt to be happy. Happy the fact that we can breathe and talk and see and walk and talk and help other people and help ourselves. This is a form of joy. And by being joyous, we're actually strengthening ourselves. And if, say, we're not the most joyous person upon the face of the earth, you know, we have the strength to employ our thought, speech, and action into joyous thoughts. Again, every person has to decide what is a joyous thought, what is a joyous speech, what is a joyous action. Enthusiasm is certainly a catalyst for all these things, but enthusiastic about what? So there are many teachings in Torah I want to point out that talk about the service of the Almighty from the perspective of joy, of simcha, or chedva, which is a panemius, an inner dimension of joy. So with that being said, we've come about 23 minutes into the program, and it looks like I'm still going to continue to solo. So I'm going to read some verses, and perhaps we'll cut short today's program, because I really prefer to do a full hour with co-hosts, and since they didn't come on today, we'll just try to do a little solo. Okay. So in chapter 1 of Mishlei of Proverbs, we've been reading from verses from the first chapter, concerning the attitude of robbers. Where in chapter 1, verse 11, it says, if they say, come with us, let us lie in wait for blood, let us hide for the incident without cause, the Ben-Ayon explains, this is referring to robbery, which the Bible compares to murder. And in Bava Kamma, the Talmudic tractate says, taking a penny from a poor man is tantamount to taking his, and I'll just add his or her soul. Hiding for the innocent, that they're hiding for the innocent without cause, meaning that the intention is that there is a unfortunate form of logistical protocol that certain types of robbers carry out. When they rob someone, then they kill the innocent person who did them no harm. Rabbeinu Yonah, one of our big scholars in Israelite history, mentioned that two categories of human beings, robbers and murderers, hate tzaddikim, the righteous, and those innocent of transgression, and lie in wait to kill them, although the innocent did them no harm. We're talking, you know, people as they get older and older, they usually have a taste of sin, of doing what's wrong, or they're lacking in their positive activities. So it also could be alluding to children. Children are not held accountable according to Torah law until they reach the first stage of adult experience, which is 12 for the young lady and 13 for the young man. Chapter 1, verse 12, let us swallow them up like the grave, and the whole ones like those who descend into the pit. So, Rabbeinu Yonah again, saying that robbery is likened to murder. The wicked are despise the righteous and innocent and seek to harm them. And since a poor man is like a dead man, according to Talmudic maxim, mortal harm is the intention of the robbers who propose to swallow up the righteous and innocent like the grave. The perfect ones are the more righteous ones. The perfect ones are more righteous than the innocent mentioned in the verse 11. So a father has the option of warning his son, or daughter for that matter, to beware of believing what the wicked tell him about the righteous, as their statements are motivated by hatred. Many years ago I had learned in Lubavitch Yeshiva, in the name of the fifth Chabad Rebbe, Shalom Dov Ber of Lubavitch, who lived from 1860 till he went to the next level of life in 1920, that Baal Taiva Sona Eved Hashem, that those who are full of desires, and it's hard for them to control their bodily wants and needs and going beyond that and just making it the central part of their life, they hate those who serve the Almighty. Chapter 1, verse 13, we will find all precious possessions, we will fill our houses with plunder. So entering the house, the robbers and murderers, because robbers are kind of synonymous as in this presentation of Mishlei, they lick their chops, so to speak, to see what type of precious possessions they'll find on this person that they will take from their house and fill up their house. Malbim, another great teacher, say that robbers/murderers look for silver and gold, valuable articles. Of course, silver and gold are some of the most precious possessions that can be held by someone in their house. But also, robbers will take that which is common treasury. It could be just, you know, regular dollars, checkbooks, credit cards to fill their houses with. Chapter 1, verse 14, cast your lot among us and we will all have one purse. So the robber enjoins someone who wants to be in every band of robbers and murderers that we will give you a share. There will be a division of our spoil based upon our efforts together as one band united to cast plunder upon others. The King Solomon taking on a fatherly concern, assuming that his words will either directly go into the mouth of the father of a up-and-coming young person, or will serve as the instruction for the person who's learning Torah to take such advice. It says in chapter 1, verse 15, my son, do not go on the path on the way with them, restrain your foot from their path. Meaning, don't emulate the poor behaviors and habits of robbers. And don't be tempted by an individual robber who seems to be making out quite well financially from his ill-gotten gain. Chapter 1, verse 16 in Proverbs, for their feet run to evil and they hasten to shed blood. The father is warning the son, as commented by Malbin, that wherever he goes with those robbers in an attempt to rob, He's engaging in something evil, for robbery is an evil thing. And, where it says they hasten to shed blood, not the blood of the victims of their robberies, but sometimes we see there are brigands of robbers where actually they kill each other off. So while a person might be enticed and recruited to join a merry band of robbers slash murderers, it could be just for him to do his part to help them accumulate the wealth, and then they murder him, or her, for that matter, and they gain the ill-gotten booty and have one less person to distribute the booty that they have captured. Chapter 1, verse 17. For a net is scattered without cause in the eyes of all winged fowl. The fowl will see, Rashi comments, another great commentator on the Oral Torah tradition, the fowl will see wheat and legumes are spread upon the net. He does not realize the reason why wheat and legumes are spread upon a net. But they're spread upon it, so when they go down to eat it, the net will come down on them and trap them, so the fowl will become the food for the person who set the trap for the fowl. Chapter 18, chapter 1, verse 18, for they lie in wait for their blood, they hide for their lives. Hunters lie in wait for the blood of the birds, meaning those who look like birds in terms of going for the net, which something is spread upon it to make it enticing to walk into the trap of the robbers, and therefore the hunters are like the predatory birds or the predatory human beings that will take snuff out the life of the birds that enter that net. Chapter 1, verse 19, so are the ways of everyone who commits robbery. It will take away the life of its owner. Whoever commits robbery, it seems like a beautiful and precious thing to him or her. It's free to him, but in the end, his own life or her own life has now become the new owner of this money. Now there's something is set in motion to the creation that eventually the robber who takes away the life of his or her victim eventually is now being set up to have his or her life taken away by another robber. And just as in the Ibn Nachmiash comments that just as birds enter into the net not realizing it's set to trap them, so two robbers overreach themselves and reach into their own nets of their own capturing, which could mean the end of their life. So Gra and Malbim, the Gra being a great Talmudic sage who was also very well versed in Kabbalah from the 18th century, mentioned that the father here in Proverbs, i.e. King Solomon giving us fatherly advice, is warning his son or daughter that robbers who wish to entice him to join their band and participate in the robberies will offer him a share of the loot. So, again, they're being given bait to run into this plan, to go with the plan. And then they will be caught in the plan themselves. And again, they themselves could be killed by the other robbers or by the authorities. And Solomon gives a solemn warning, which is interpreted by the Gra and Malbim, that one who shares in the spoils of robbery will eventually be murdered. Let's now end on a positive note. Blessed Souls, and we'll play some music to segue out of today's program, a little shorter than usual. Chapter 1, verse 20, wisdom shout in the street, in the square, she gives forth her voice. What is this referring to? The wisdoms of Torah, as we understand it of Israel, cry out in your streets, meaning in the streets, the hallways, the byways and highways of human consciousness, beckoning them to come to the street of study halls of learning Torah. Meaning that when Torah is studied intensively and elaborated upon, it creates a structure, a light casting out, not only into the place where the Torah is being learned, but also it creates a catalyst for the Torah being taught in the public, in the streets, in the squares, On the one hand, there is a oral Torah tradition that Torah should be taught discreetly, not in the streets. Therefore, on the one level, streets and the squares are therefore understood to be the study halls. At the same time, too, when whoever studies Torah on the inside, meaning in hallowed halls of study with other students and with competent teachers, his or her Torah accomplishments are manifested into the actual streets of the community that he lives in. And a person becomes recognizable as someone who is embodying a godly type of knowledge. And therefore we see that Ralbag, another great commentator, mentions that the Almighty's wisdom in creation is manifest in nature, visible to all. And it cries out to the naive and the fools to leave their foolish ways. So we'll leave it at that, blessed souls, and we're going to segue out with a wonderful song. Usually I play a some Jewish music at the beginning and Jewish end, but here I have some very, very powerful music by a musician who hasn't been given his proper due, I believe, on the international level, although his videos are shown, and he has like over 5,000 subscribers, Clinton Firan, who used to be, I think, a part of the Abyssinians, another reggae group, I think from probably the 60s, 70s, or 80s. I don't know if the other Abyssinians are still around, but Clinton Firan went out and struck his own unique niche in the creation with his music, and he wrote a song, as people are probably aware of, The Wages of Sin or Death, but he wrote, What Are the Wages of Love? So let's consider that, and please listen carefully to these words, blessed souls. I hope that Clinton Firan will be given more public acknowledgement of his great talents. This is a song which I think was produced over 9 years ago. It sounds very contemporary, and it sounds like something that a lot of human beings need to learn about, think about, meditate about, speak about, and carry out in practical action, engaging in the wages of love. This is Don Zosigubin, your international local cyberspace Torah activist, wishing everyone Ahav Echad, one love. Gor Elechad, one destiny kolano for all of us, but Darkim Darki Shalom, in a pleasant, peaceful way. And I just want to remind everyone, you're not in a dream. You have a Tzelem Elohim. You have a divine image of scrimmage to make this place a proper abode for the revelation of the divine presence of the Creator, also known as Shekhinah, which is also drawn down from levels of Shekhinah even higher than itself. The essence of the Creator wants to be revealed down here, but it requires human stewardship. Every man, woman, and child, female or male, whatever you consider yourself to be. So let's end up with the wages of love. And I wish everyone a beautiful week. And hopefully now we're going to ascend out of this program, not to conclude our efforts, but to continue to elevate our efforts in a way that once we realize there's no more jealousy and hatred and unneeded competition, we'll find ourselves facing squarely in the face and the heart and the mind and the soul, the universal redemption. Take care, everyone.
Your life, you got the right to choose.